Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello friends, I hope you've made it through the dull, boring, bland international break without too much drama going on. I hope you enjoyed your free weekend. But the good news is, of course, friends, Ipswich Town football is back this weekend. We've got a game to look forward to, and it's a bloody ruddy big one as well. It's the biggest game since at least, I would say, the last game as Everton head to Portman Road. Mark Heath, Stuart Watson, Alex Jones all here to break it down for you. Rossi currently sunning himself in beautiful Dubrovnik, but he'll be back at Portman Road on Saturday. So do say hello and ask him about his trip if you see him. Boys, we had a free weekend. You weren't watching football. You didn't have to be anywhere this weekend. Stewie, what did you do? You talked about taking your daughter for a 5K run. Did that happen? Did you destroy her and then tell her about it afterwards?
No, she destroyed me, Mark.
What?
I didn't know how far she'd make it around. She was telling me how much she enjoyed running at school. So I went thinking we might do one lap. We sort of turned up at the our local 5K and they sort of had a little look at her. She's quite sort of smallish for her age at eight. And they went, oh, we do a junior one on Sunday that might be more suitable. I said, well, we'll see how we get on. And she ran me into the ground. She was really good. Everyone was saying, wow, you're doing well. Never mind about her. What about me for keeping up? We got all the way around and she did really well.
So he's a future athlete in the making. She's clearly got the eye of the tiger by the sound of it. Junior run, not for me, mate. I'll do the senior stuff.
Bags of energy. It's like having a dog. She was get a bit of exercise into him early in the day and then she was nice and chilled for the rest of the afternoon on the sofa, which was good.
Excellent. Alex, I'm assuming you didn't run a 5K. I'm taking that bold leap. What did you do?
How dare you? You don't know that. I didn't.
I do know that.
Okay, brilliant. What did I get up to? I went to see Sophie because she'd been ill and then she was no longer ill. So I went over to see her, which was nice. Went to Letchworth. I've never been to Letchworth before. It's quite nice, quite pretty. Spent some time over there and then enjoyed the incredible sights of, has anyone here, I assume you haven't because there isn't anything near to Ipswich. Has anyone been to Costco before? Because that's an experience.
No, that's one of these massive, like buying bulk places, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So if there's anything that you want to buy in bulk, you go there. You have to pay for a membership, but Sophie qualifies through teaching. And you just can buy everything in bulk, nice and cheap. And
is that where you can buy like a slab of cheese like this big?
You know, stuff like that. And then you can also come afterwards. You want to get drinks, you can buy them in bulk nicely, get loads of them for a cheaper price. Bits like that. Yeah, a nice eyebrow raise there.
So now you're talking my language.
The scariest one was I came home with a chocolate cake because I kind of did it joking a little bit, but my God, this thing is literally, I think it's like one of these industry size, like anyone who's been to Costco will probably know the chocolate cake. I mean, they put it like front and center. And I thought, well, you know what? This is going to be a challenge. It's only about just a few quid. I'll try it and we'll see how much my family can get through in the space of kind of the week before you're supposed to kind of get rid of it. I think we're about just under a quarter of the way through between three of us so far. It's been about 5 or 6 days, so we're struggling.
How big is this chocolate cake? And I've got any dimensions?
I can provide dimensions post show. Yeah, like at least about, if you have a whole table, it would take up a hell of a lot of space. If you put it up to my head, it would probably be like two heads, basically.
There you go. So Stu ran a 5K. You basically stuffed yourself with chocolate cake in your free weekend.
Well, I was going to, but I can't face it, unfortunately.
You're now sick of chocolate cake.
And then haven't been able to do anything with it, yeah.
Fair play. Costco sounds like my sort of gaff, if you can get bulk buys on various things. I did something which I enjoyed tremendously. A bit of a guilty pleasure for me. I mean, obviously, by the way, friends, I was still working. I do work every weekend. That's why I earn the mediocre salary that I earn. I went to the tip. I bloody love going to the tip. Alex, you're way too young to enjoy going to the tip because you don't even own your own house yet. You don't have to worry about refuse in the house in which you live in. But Stu, I reckon you're a man like me. It's fond of making a trip to the tip. It's so cathartic getting rid of all the shit that you've got in your house, just chucking it out. It feels so good afterwards.
Yeah, I don't mind a tip run. It's like a it's like a little game, isn't it? Load up the car, get rid of a load of stuff. Yeah.
What would you put where though? That's the big problem. I had kitchen knives, which I wasn't sure where to put. Apparently, if you're asking, you can just whack them in scrap metal, friends.
Okay. Yeah, there's always that little period where you get out the car and look a little bit lost and sort of look around. I've been there dozens of times. You'd think you'd know by now. Trying to find where does glass go, mate? Where does rubble go? Do I have to pay for that?
It's really like you can get quite a lot of aggression out as well, can't you? Because when you chuck the stuff in, see how much you can smash as you like chuck it over the side of whatever you're putting it into. I love it. Tip is massively underrated. It's something I really enjoy. Anyway, friends, that's enough of what we did over the free weekend. And I hope you had a good one. Because in terms of Ipswich Town, obviously they weren't playing, but many of Ipswich Town's players were playing over the international break, excitingly. And I'm going to cross live now to our international correspondent, Alex Jones, who's going to give us a concise roundup of what the players did. And maybe start with what you think is the most interesting and then kind of build towards the bottom of the least interesting stuff, mate. So on you go. Concise.
You've asked me to rank the players in concise importance to least importance. Right. Ireland, most important, because there were four of them. The Republic of Town. Ogbeni, Smodix and O'Shea started both of the games. They beat Finland in the first one, 2-1, which was good. And then they went to Greece in the second one and they lost 2-0, which was bad, but they played all right. And then Jack Taylor got his debut. And to be perfectly honest, Jack Taylor was the best player on the pitch when he was on and had a couple of good chances to score, but he didn't score. So that was a shame. England under-21s probably comes next. With that one, the first one, Amari Hutchinson and Liam Delap both started in Bournemouth against Ukraine, which was a huge game. And they won it with two late goals. Delap got a booking, which meant that he couldn't play in the second game. And Hutchinson was pretty quiet. But then Hutchinson was benched for the second game, which was against Azerbaijan and Bristol. And he came off the bench. And I thought, you know what? I can just start writing this report already. He's probably not going to do too much. He's only got about half an hour. Was I wrong? Yes, I was. He got two assists, I think, technically, both crosses from the right. And then he also got another one where he forced the own goal. Adjudication panel, do we count that as an assist?
Yes.
Yes, so three assists. And then also he scored a tap-in from close range, which is the first goal for the under-21s. So that's great. And they won that game 7-0 because they're really good, the under-21s, and they're going to the Euros next summer. Wales played. That was fun. Wes Burns came off the bench in the first game against Iceland, where they threw away a two-goal lead because they are inconsistent at football. And Wes Burns then started the second game because Brennan Johnson was suspended. And then Nathan Broadhead came on for his first competitive minutes since June. His first hasn't played for Town since May, I think. Might have even been April. I think it was the Coventry game he last played. So it's been a long time since he's played for Town. Muric came back into the fold for Kosovo, which was good. He played the second game where they beat Cyprus 3-0. So that was nice. And then the last one was Cameron Burgess. We'll put that one last because he didn't play at all in the first game. I think it was against China. Yeah, 3-1 against China. And then he started in the second game against Japan, which looked like it was all going well. And I just had a feeling that's an own goal in this. And about 3 minutes later, there was an own goal. And I thought, oh, no. And he'd scored the own goal. So it finished 1-1 against Japan in World Cup qualifying. So there are your 10 internationals, I hope.
Do you know what, mate? That was really good. I enjoyed it. Old Cam. Hey, can't get a game for Town, flies halfway around the world to score an own goal. Then comes
we had
back
said at the time that it would be really nice if he could score a goal. I think we said that in the morning, didn't we? It'd be really good considering he's not playing. And he did, to be fair. Just in the wrong net, unfortunately.
Oh dear. Stu, I mean, obviously I somewhat facetiously said on our last show that I didn't care about internationals. And I don't, to be honest, I don't care about international football. It's dull. I just hope that the players came back with that injury. But I suppose there is a good talking point from it in that we saw players in different roles than we'd normally see. Wes Burns, for example, played on the left for Wales. Dara O'Shea, interestingly, played at right back for the Republic of Ireland. That's a conversation we're going to have in due course. And Kieran McKenna was among those interestedly watching, Stu.
Yeah, I revisited some quotes, full disclosure, that came after the previous international break, where, you know, we spoke to Kieran about how much of the international action he watches during the break. And he said, well, I don't often get to many in person because it's a bit of a balancing act between some family time and obviously some time on the training pitch with the lads. But he watches them all between him and his staff on TV. Through a point of pride in seeing his players go away and play on the world stage, but also, interestingly, to kind of see them play in different systems, different roles with different teammates. And I can learn a bit more about my players, especially new players that have only just come into the building in the last few weeks / months. And he'll have certainly been able to see some different things from his players over the games that Alex has just reeled off. As you mentioned, Wes Burns on the left, not the first time he's done that for Wales. Dara O'Shea has generally played at right back, I think, in more recent times for the Republic of Ireland, and has played that role previously in his career for West Brom. And Omari Hutchinson getting those assists and goal out on the right-hand side for England under-21s. And I know that's a bit of a debate at the moment about, around whether Omari would be better suited out on the right for Ipswich. Obviously, there's a right-back debate to be had with Axel being injured as well. So I'm sure it's given the manager a bit of food for thought ahead of Everton at the weekend.
Mm, we are going to have that right-back debate in a minute when we talk about Everton. AJ, you obviously watched a lot of these games, because you have to as international correspondent. What was it like in terms of Wes Burns? I know he has played on the left before for Wales, but how did he get on in terms of players playing out of position?
Better than I thought he might. It put me on edge a little bit, because with wingers a lot, let's take Omari, there's a lot of them that feel comfortable playing on the right and on the left. And you've watched Wes a lot more than I have. I don't think that he's the kind of player that you would have said, oh yeah, let's put him on the left. That feels like a natural thing. Because he's very direct. He's very kind of set in that position. And it suited him quite well. And I don't think that, I can't remember who they played on. It was in Montenegro they played on Monday. I don't think they were fully prepared for that necessarily. Like, I think you have to be kind of quite prepared to play against Wes Burns sometimes. And the fact he was coming up on the left, it meant that the right back Marusic, who was hooked at half time in, I think, four subs that they made at the break, left quite a lot of space for him, and he was getting into good positions. Wasn't that clinical. Maybe could have had there's probably a couple of chances he could have had to score, but he was getting in nice areas. The deliveries were good. Showed that he's capable of doing it, I'd say. So, liked what I saw. It was something different. Came in a little bit more narrow, was on the right. I think he's quite high and wide. But clearly, Craig Bellamy's seen something in him that makes him a candidate to be on that left flank for Wales.
I did it on the subject of Craig Bellamy, by the way. I heard an interview with him, which I thought was interesting, where he said that he hates the word process, which clearly is a big word at Ipswich Town. So I wonder if Wes, and Craig's sitting there slagging off process, Wes is like, no. It'd be interesting to see the kind of dichotomy between the two. The other thing worth mentioning, of course, is Liam Delap, who impressed. We know Liam is red hot to start this season. He impressed in the game that he did play against the Ukraine. Quotes out there from the interim under-21 boss saying he's an absolute handful, and what a very good striker Town have got on their hands, AJ.
Yeah, absolutely. And the bit that stood out to me from this is that wasn't him being a constant threat for the entire time. He was very, very set on bringing others into play. I think that's a big part of the 21s, where you've got so much fun, attacking, exciting talent. And on the analysis bit I did about Ipswich's performance, I kind of alluded to that as well, where you see some of the bits where he turns into space, and all of a sudden that allows his teammates to get forward. It opens up these gaps, even against top sides. I mean, the Villa game was probably the one that stood out to me, and he was doing it in his game against Ukraine, who were a really good side. They think they'd won all their matches before they played England. I think almost in a way, at times, he needed to be a little bit more selfish, to be perfectly honest. But in terms of what he was bringing to it, as my washing machine and some motorbikes got from the background, I was really, really impressed by what he brought to that game. And came off without any goals or assists, but worked hard and created the chances. And then I guess there's a bit of a debate around the yellow card as well, where he can get a bit wound up can't he? He can get a bit physical. I don't mind the kind of the physical aspect of his game, but you can see sometimes he's been booked for dissent and stuff like that. And I guess that's maybe the side that people watching him are frustrated by. I think the manager, Ben Futcher, kind of referenced that. And I think it's happened on maybe one or two occasions for Town as well. If you're getting booked for centre-forward play, fair enough. But you don't want to be talking yourself into the book because you're arguing with the referee week in, week out. So I guess that's maybe the side that he'll want to change and build on and be able to kind of harness the aggression, I think, was what Futcher said. But other than that, yeah, I was impressed by what he showed in that game.
He's only 21. I was arguing with a lot of people when I was 21. He'll grow up a little bit, I'm sure. Stewie, 69 days till Christmas. Very excited about that. But we found out, was it Wednesday? A lot of things in terms of fixtures have changed for Ipswich Town by way of talking points. I guess the main one is they won't be playing, in fact, on Boxing Day.
Yeah, I think Alex put something in his tweet. It's only the... How many times in the last however long you'll have to...
Three in the 21st century. Yeah, yeah. So it was, they had a Boxing Day game called off against Watford in 2010, and then there were a couple due to COVID back-to-back years, Gillingham and Northampton. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be a strange feeling. Chatting to a few fans yesterday and about the season so far, and a lot of the feedback was a bit bored, to be honest. There's not enough games and, you know, there's too many breaks and missing the midweek action. And, you know, now there's going to be a bunch of Sunday matches, no game on Boxing Day. It's the price of success, I suppose, isn't it? We've said we're in that spot in between not being one of the big boys that are flying off to Europe every other week and so, and they're not in the EFL where it's completely relentless. So a different rhythm to the season, not just for the players, but for those on the outside as well and for supporters. So, yeah, that'll be strange. Obviously, then kind of knock-on effects as well with the Chelsea game getting pushed back. So, yeah, was it seven games all in all?
Seven games. I'm not going to go through all of them. If you want to see them, obviously, we've got a list on our website. The Boxing Day game is clearly the kind of talking point, I guess, because now they're playing on the 27th, the Friday, at 8:15, which is a right pain in the arse for our deadlines, I don't mind telling you. And the other one I thought was interesting, just in terms of, how many times has that happened before? They're going to play on Thursday night on January the 16th against Brighton. Now, Stu, I don't know how many times in Town history they would have played on Thursday night. Not many.
No, I can't give you the answer to that. That's not.
I wasn't expecting you to give me the answer.
Not many is probably the answer to that. I mean, going back to the Arsenal game, I'm sure. Is that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Amazon?
Amazon Prime.
I would imagine they would have preferred that to have been on Boxing Day evening. But I would imagine then you got to then consider transport and be people being able to get home on Boxing Day with trains and stuff like that at, you know, gone 10 o'clock at night would have probably come into it, I would have thought. But it is what it is. I always feel for people that have tried to plan in advance and book trains and hotels and book time off and all that sort of stuff. Something that we're getting used to. There was plenty of TV games last year, wasn't there? So
main concern is people have now got to spend time with their family on Boxing Day. It wants to be doing that when you can be going to watch football. Incredible. AJ, any thoughts on the fixture changes?
Oh, the Boxing Day one's a weird one, I guess, isn't it? That's the strange one. I think there's rail works on that day. So if you thought you were going to get the train down to that one, probably double check just to make sure you actually can, especially considering that the game will finish, what's it going to be, about 10 maybe? I was talking to Ross about, is this maybe the latest that an Ipswich game has ever kicked off? Because obviously in the FL, you don't see them kick off later than 8 for sure. So 8:15, have we ever kind of pushed to that before? I'm not too sure. As for the other ones, I think they'd probably be quite kind. I've seen quite a few teams have been screwed over, so things like having the Bournemouth game moved at the start of December is not the end of the world. The Fulham trip moved both Sunday 2 o'clock, isn't that bad. Chelsea's a bit of a pain, but because it's a home game, it's all right, even though it's been moved to a quarter to eight now. And Yeah, I guess not just to reel off the full list, like you said, that we weren't going to do. The City's Super Sunday as well will be interesting. The feature game of the weekend at Portman Road.
It's a bit of a kinder schedule than like last year because we had the game on the, was the Leeds game 23rd. On the 23rd,
was,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
That was bad, yeah.
Which made for a ridiculous schedule. A lot of managers last year were kind of spoke out about there just being, look, it's tradition in this country. Everyone loves their festive football, but that was one game too many last year. The QPR game being squeezed in. They played 23rd, 26th.
28th, 29th, and Stoke on New Year's Day after that.
Yeah, and that QPR game was rubbish. There was about 5-6 players out injured ill, wasn't there? And it was 0-0, and the atmosphere was really flat. And I think that wasn't just Ipswich sort of complaining about that. That was everybody. That was that. So this year, what will it be? It will be the Newcastle games now on the 21st. So there's a bit of a breather. Well, yeah, there'll be a decent gap then to Arsenal. Chelsea a few days later, and then into what's the New Year's fixture?
There is no like New Year's Day-ish fixture, but the first one into New Year's, that Fulham game on the 5th, I think that 5th, is now.
Yeah.
It's so, far more civilised, but in some ways it's a bit too civilised. As you say, it does feel a bit quiet, doesn't it? Anyway, that is all coming up, friends. And in terms of what is coming up next, Portman Road on Saturday, Everton come into town. We're only 7 games into the season, but that is quite a chunk of games already. I mean, it's almost 20% of the season gone. Town still looking for their first win. So I ask you, Stuart Watson, you are going to have to probably lean into some cliches here. How big is this game for Ipswich Town? Because there is the old Mitchell and Webb sketch, the biggest game since the last game. Football, football, football. That's funny because it's true. But it is a big game for Ipswich Town. These are the sort of games, Stewie, they're going to have to get things from and ideally win if they are going to stay in the Premier League.
Never mind a big game for Ipswich Town. Big game for me, Mark. Boyhood,
of course.
Boyhood, yes. Evertonian. I've got a little picture I want to share with you first. Do you want to see it? When I was a bit quiet when we first got in here earlier, I was trying to upload this. Hopefully it will work. So this is one for viewers of the pod. I think we've mentioned it a few times. I've never made a big deal of my sort of football fandom growing up. And look, it's diminished a lot over the years. Half the time I've been a very poor football fan because, you know, Saturdays has been Ipswich Town work. But nevertheless, look, here's me. Here's little Stewie. Look at that bedroom.
That's bedroom?
That's my bedroom. Look.
My goodness me.
Curtains, bedsheets.
Yeah. Literally everything you could have Everton branded is branded Everton. Is that also Everton colours on the walls, Stewie?
Yeah, painted.
Wow,
that horrible wood chip wallpaper that they used to have back in the day.
Yeah,
that was a real pain to paint that. Yeah, I've got bright yellow around the top, bright blue around the bottom.
Good lord,
CD player in there. Yeah,
can I see a can of Lynx Africa there on that? On the
yeah, almost certainly that would be Lynx Africa. Yeah,
yeah,
that was around. I guess that I'm looking at that poster. I think it's Francis Jeffers.
Wow,
that's next to me there. So that probably dates it around sort of late 90s. I must be about 13, 14, something like that in there. So that gives you an idea of how mad an Everton fan I was growing up. So. Yeah, there's a little bit of extra for me on this one. Slightly split loyalties, I guess. But yeah, look, with my work hat on, it's a massive game for Ipswich Town. And already people are talking about whether this is must-win territory and where game was this game 8 into the season, which seems slightly ridiculous. Of course, it's not must-win in a literal sense, because there are plenty more games to come. But I think from a psychological point of view, I wouldn't just pin it on this game. I'd look at these next three as a block now. I'd look at Everton at home, Brentford away, and then Leicester at home after that. For me, I think there has to be one win in those three games just to get over that, get that monkey off the back and get a bit of belief, you know, both internally for the players and externally for supporters as well. And if Ipswich can kind of keep tracking along at roughly a point per game and just keep themselves, you know, just don't get cut adrift too much, because I do think they'll get better as the season goes on. But the fear is that they leave themselves a bit too much to do. And as you say, fewer games in the Premier League, as we've discussed, and all of a sudden, you know, like you said, 20% into the season, some quarter into the season, and you can be going, the season's running away from us. So massive game Saturday, no getting away from it. Massive, massive sort of few weeks ahead.
AJ, Town, I think, by general consensus, have done pretty well so far. You know, they've got some good results. 4 points from 7 games, taking aside the bit of a tonking they got at West Ham last time, which is a bit deflating. But as long as they go without this win, it's going to become more and more of a thing, isn't it? More and more of an issue, more and more of a question. Well, they've done well, but they still haven't won a game. So how are you feeling going into this one?
Yeah, it is going to be like that. And I think it's probably a good thing that there's 4 other teams that haven't got a win so far this season. So there is a bit of a group there. And again, I've spoken about kind of the marginal differences, but even having 2-3 points on the teams below, it can be the difference maker at this point. So, albeit they've not had the win, I think you do have to factor in the fact that they've been picking up points and they haven't lost that many. The only teams to beat them, Liverpool, Manchester City, and then West Ham before the break. The interesting thing with this game, I think the home games are so important. And I think that in terms of the difference between points picked up at home and away, when you look at the whole Premier League, I think that Ipswich might have the biggest difference between them. I really back them to get results at home because they're playing exceptionally well. I think that there's not a game I've looked at and thought they've been poor. The worst they've been was the end of the Liverpool game where they just, at the end of the day, ran out of steam a little bit, and that's okay. Other than that, could have beaten Fulham, could have beaten Aston Villa. So looking at it from that perspective, I think that the home games are massive, and then compared to the away games, I think they found it harder. Obviously, you can write off City, but then they really were on the other end of a bit of a pasting in everything but scoreline at Brighton, found things pretty hard at Southampton, and then the West Ham game. They haven't seemed to have got to grips in terms of getting the performances away from home, but they have got that home, and that's what now has to build into results, I think. So yeah, look at it as a block of three. I think Brentford next week, not to get ahead of ourselves, that is a really, really hard game, but this and the Leicester game, really important in terms of coming up against sides that you want Town to finish above, probably need Town to finish above, at least one, possibly both of them, but also playing at home where the performances have been, I'd say, considerably better than the ones we've seen on the road.
Right, I'm going to stick with you, AJ, then I'll go to Watto for some analysis. The big talking point, I guess, from a Town point of view, aside from the need to get a result and a win, is who replaces Big Axel Tuanzebe, right back. We know he's out for the foreseeable future, having badly injured his hand whilst washing up. Still questions unresolved around that for me. Why does he not have a dishwasher, etc.? But in terms of who replaces him, AJ, you wrote something, I think it went online yesterday, which if you've not read it, go back and read it. Do you want to run us through the options as you see them, and then we can talk about who may best fit? And also, I've got a poll from the KOA Army to bring into play as well. We can ask Watson his thoughts.
Yeah, two main ones and a few other ones. And in terms of the main ones, Ben Johnson keeping his place is kind of the one that stands out, because he was the one who came in for the last game against West Ham. But I understand that the performance in that game, and then probably his performances overall this season, haven't been ideal. So there is going to be that kind of feeling that some people want to try something else. You've got Dara O'Shea, who, as we mentioned, played in that role for Ireland, did quite well, got stuck in. But I know that Ireland fans have been saying, oh, it just doesn't feel right. It feels like he's going to be better playing at centre-back. And then you've also got to think about the fact they've been building this relationship with Jacob Greaves. Other than that, Harry Clark, sorry, I forgot to transfer your paragraph off Word. Harry, that was embarrassing. But essentially thought that with his injury, having come back, having not played for a while, Achilles, I think, can be quite easily triggered again coming back in. It just felt to me that although it would be interesting to see him get a run in the team, it feels like it's a bit of a risk to kind of throw him in at the deep end when you need someone to be starting week in, week out until Axel Tuanzebe is back. Chiwogbene's played there, but I think that's a bit of a risk. And you could also look at Jens Kizus, who plays there for Sweden occasionally. So I think for me, the two candidates that stand out are Ben Johnson and Dara O'Shea. O'Shea is a bit more of a like-for-like for Axel Tuanzebe. And then Johnson, who at the end of the day has been signed to compete in that right-back spot, is a right-back. But there will be question marks, I suppose, over those performances that he's had.
Right then. Run a poll on the KOA Twitter just asking who should come in. I had almost 300 votes in a matter of hours yesterday. Interestingly, these are results. So who should replace Axel? The winner with 40% of the vote, and this is a sign generally in terms of football, when you don't play or haven't played for a while, you become a better player. Harry Clark wins the poll, 40%. Dara O'Shea, 34%. Ben Johnson, 25%. Other, 1%. And we've got comments from various people. Noel Baker says, anyone but Johnson. Someone else, Calmian, says, Johnson for me. McKenna would never go give up on a player after a performance, work on the training ground and get back in. The sweetest of wealth princes, says Harvey Davis, says O'Shea at right back, Wolfie brought back in at centre back. Callum Brissett, really don't like the message you would send out if Johnson was to be replaced after one poor start. O'Shea and Greaves are forming a good partnership. Leave it as for me. Hannah Derbyshire says Harry Clark. Epic Prince says bring back the Wolf and play O'Shea, which I think in terms of feedback has been the most popular. What do you reckon, Stewie?
No chance Harry Clark would be the first thing I'd say. He had Achilles surgery on both Achilles tendons in May and hasn't played any sort of, you know, he's not up to speed in terms of playing any games of football or anything like that. So to chuck him straight in from the start, I think, is a no-go. Mm. For me, I know that there's an outside shout. People said Wolfenden has played right back before, but I can't see that happening. It's a straight shout between sticking with Johnson. And as some of those listeners have pointed out, what does that say to him? That could absolutely destroy his confidence if you take him out after one game. Or you go with O'Shea. And I think you have to take into account the opposition and some of their strengths a little bit. And I look at Ndiaye, he's a direct, skillful, left-sided winger for Everton, who's, by all accounts, been one of their better players so far. They might even put Dwight McNeil back out onto that left-hand side, potentially, if they're looking at Ipswich, have got some right-back issues. And as we know, in this system, the right-back is essentially a right-sided centre-half, you know, tucks inside. And I think that's why it was working so well for Axel, that he was a kind of a centre-back playing as a right-back, and that would be the same with O'Shea as well. Obviously, the knock-on effect is that you're then not building that partnership between Greaves and O'Shea, as discussed. But Luke Wolfenden could find himself hard done by to have dropped out the team. This is a player that Kieran McKenna has been very loyal to. I think he was the most started player under Kieran McKenna up until the end of last season and had started this season well. I thought he was unfortunate to drop out. So, yeah, it's a straight swap between those two, to be honest. I mean, well, let's not forget that Ben Johnson is a experienced Premier League player, certainly by Ipswich's squad's standards. Mm. They brought him in for a reason. It's a home game. He provides a bit more of an attacking threat. Really difficult one to call this.
Mm. AJ, the other feedback we had was from Matt Casburn, who said play wing-backs with Wolfie, O'Shea, Greaves and then Burns on the right. What would you do and what do you think Kieran McKenna will do?
They kind of already play wing backs as it is, to be fair. They come in and out of the back four, back five. They're never gonna stick purely to one system, and kind of going on a little bit to the right side of debate, that's why you see quite often it's Burns or Ogbene, because they are faster at runners, but also they can track back and defend. So I think that the wing back idea, yeah, it's nice, but they already do that. So I kind of get it from that perspective, and especially if O'Shea came in, and with Axel in particular, that is what it is. I'd probably err to the side of saying that I don't like the message it sends if you drop Ben Johnson, someone who turned down a lucrative contract at West Ham multiple years. I was hearing more than 5 years. Mm. I'm sure quite a lot of money would have been on the table for that, because he wants to play regular football. Already has a lot of experience behind him, has come here, he was on the bench and came on against Liverpool, I think that was right, and then he started against Man City, hasn't played since then came in for the West Ham game, so he's not played a lot of football. I know he played against Wimbledon in the Cup, but that's all that he's had. He's never been a Premier League regular before this, and I don't like the idea of him coming in and trying to now build up those minutes and for him to be pushed to the side, especially as a natural right back. And if you're being pushed out for another player who is a centre-back to come in and start in your position? What message does that kind of send, not in terms of how your early performances are being judged, but also in terms of the pecking order and being able to say, well, this player's out, so you should be given the chance to step up. So I think he personally deserves the opportunity. I do get the issue because the performances haven't been great so far this season, and points are vital. This game is absolutely vital, and you want to have the best player possible to take on Ajay or McNeil or whoever's going to play on the left. And if that is O'Shea, and if McKenna deems that to be O'Shea, then personally I've got no qualms about that. But from my perspective, I don't think that it sends the right message, and I don't think that that's kind of the approach that Kieran McKenna would have to how to use the squad.
That's where I ultimately I'm at. I think I'm sort of could see reasons for both, but personally would be leaning towards Ben Johnson. That's where I cast my vote in the poll for exactly what Alex just said.
Yeah, I think realistically, Sue, it is going to be Ben Johnson, isn't it? If we know anything about Kieran McKenna, it will be Ben Johnson. What does he bring that maybe Axel doesn't, Sue? Because you'd say he's probably more of an attacking threat.
Yeah, probably maybe that little bit. I mean, Axel's athletic, but I guess Ben Johnson's that bit more dynamic, I guess, with his forward running. I'll be honest, we've got such a small sample size. I can't tell you exactly his kind of full attributes list at the moment. Alex has seen him a lot more for West Ham in recent years than I have, but I think he is someone that's also played. We talk about him being more of a traditional fullback, but I think he has played centre half in his career as well. He has tucked inside as well. So there's a reason Kieran McKenna bought him. He thought he was well suited to this right back role. And he deserves a chance. We keep having this debate, not writing players off after one early bad performance. I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt. West Ham performance wasn't great, but I don't think it was as bad as some people are making out. There was, you know, probably a number of factors, a little bit of rustiness, maybe a little bit of extra pressure going, but for the game to be back at West Ham of all clubs as well. Let's not be writing anybody off at this stage.
AJ, it's a good point that Stu makes. You've seen Ben Johnson probably a lot more than pretty much anyone else listening to this podcast, unless they happen to be a hammer just casually cruising by the Ipswich Town podcast. What can you tell us about him as a player that maybe we've not seen as yet?
It's mostly that. I mean, to be perfectly honest, he hasn't started that many games. He's not as strong defensively in those 1v1s as Axel is and possibly as O'Shea would be in that position, but he suits a back five, I think, and being able to cover multiple positions. I think that, again, the forward runs are important. And one of the things I've noticed a little bit is just the movement that I think could suit Ipswich, where sometimes you want to be able to come into little gaps. And what we've seen Ipswich do is play a 4-2-4, for example, being able to then come from the right flank and kind of come and fill in a little bit of a midfield role. Does well in terms of doubling up with a wing back. I think if he's got someone next to him to be able to then come and shut down that space, I think works quite well. So those are the things that I've noticed. He is better going forward. He gets into more advanced areas. You look at the City game. Okay, talking about an Ipswich game here, but for that one, he was so high up. He was playing quite central. He actually almost took up that midfield role that I mentioned, where the ball that he plays for Smodex for the assist, it comes from a narrow area and it comes from playing really, really high up the pitch. So I get that it's not necessarily maybe the ideal situation, especially where on the other side of the pitch you want Davis, who's going to do the same thing, and having two fullbacks who want to kind of push up and play like that can be an issue. But I also think it can offer you something a little bit different on that right side, where you want to have a little bit more going forward, a bit more dynamic, a bit more energy and attacking thrust, and he can add to that.
Okay, we'll come on to the rest of the team in a minute. Let's talk about Everton, though, just for a minute, Stu, because there's a danger, I think, that many in some ways, like we've talked about with Southampton and with West Ham games, that you look at a side and look at how they're doing in the table and go, Town should win this game. But obviously Everton, they started the season dreadfully and have righted the ship a little bit in the last few weeks. Three games unbeaten, got their first win against Crystal Palace. Really good result against Newcastle last time out as well. Clear star player in Dwight McNeil. What are you expecting from Everton, who seem to be on a little bit of an uptick?
Yeah, without overstating it, but obviously off the field, they've had some positive news finally after the takeover sagas of recent times. The 777 group falling through. Finally, it looks like the Friedrich Group takeover is going through. So that gave them a bit of a boost off the pitch. It's three unbeaten. They've, from the sort of highlights and the coverage that I've seen of Everton, they've been inconsistent with their performances, really good for spells in games, moments where they look like they could blow teams away. They've obviously thrown away two goal leads against Bournemouth and Villa, conceded some pretty poor goals as well, some pretty scrappy set-piece goals, all different types of goals in there. There's a counter-attack goal against Spurs, a lot of crosses into their box. So Ipswich will be looking at that, thinking with the home crowd, the fact that they've proven they can score goals themselves, certainly at Portman Road, they'll be thinking there's a chance to score. But equally, under Sean Dyche, you know that they'll have certain qualities. I think I saw a stat that only two teams have kept more clean sheets than Everton in the Premier League since the start of last season, and that was Arsenal and Liverpool. And you know, they've got the 0-0 against Newcastle last time out. Yes, there was a penalty save in there as well. And you just look at their squad and it's packed with Premier League experience, you know, and we mustn't lose sight of that. You know, Branthwaite may be back in, a player that was being linked with a £70 million move to Man United and others in the summer. If he's not fit, then it's Keane and Tarkowski, between them, probably close to two decades worth of Premier League experience. And you can go through, and Calvert-Lewin up front as well, who's someone who's been linked to various clubs over the years. So, if there was any underestimating of West Ham last time out, maybe, as I said, that's a bit of a reality check, and it might be a good thing that everyone comes to Portman Road knowing that there are no easy games in the Premier League and that they need to fully be behind the team to give them the best chance possible.
What's your take on Everton, AJ? I know it's something you'll be doing a deep dive into for the Meet the Oppo bit that you always write, but we've talked a lot about vibes, and clearly you picked Everton to struggle this season because of vibes. What do you make of them as we stand now going into this game of town?
Yeah, vibes because of the takeover situation, and now that looks to be coming towards a conclusion, I would expect them to pick up. That's the big thing, and I think that it's important for people to realise that this isn't the easy game that I think it can be painted out to be, because Everton this season have been, I hate to say, a bit of a joke club, a bit of a banter club. When you look at, they're the ones who are singled out for the loud boos at the stadium, for some of the clips we've seen. We've seen fans harassing the player and the manager coming back from the Tottenham game on the train. It's all kind of built this picture of a club that is a basket case club that literally is doomed. And I think that with that, it's gone under the radar that in all competitions they're beaten in four games, which is not an easy thing to do. And in that, they've obviously got their first win of the season against Palace. I think that in terms of the individual games, they tend to play well in spells, as Stu said, that can be really, really good. And then I think it's individual moments where they just switch off, and it feels like sometimes when one goes in, they all go in. They've had a couple of two-goal leads that they've thrown away. I mean, the Bournemouth game, my God, 87... 92, 95 or something like that was one of the most astonishing collapses I think we've seen in this league. But it's a quality team, and the bits that stand out to me as maybe the weaknesses would be the centre-back partnership, where Keane, I think, maybe isn't necessarily a brilliant top-flight level centre-back, and then Ashley Young, who's come under some heavy criticism. You're now looking at Branthwaite and Mikalenko were both back in training, could feature over the weekend. Their only win of the season has come with Jared Branthwaite at the back. And if he's back in for this game, you'd say that physical battle against Liam Delap is going to be tasty, but also one that's going to keep Delap's hands full. So important from Ipswich's perspective that they have lots of threats going forward. Don't rely too heavily on Delap, who's going to have a hell of a battle if Branthwaite starts. And just that people recognise that the quality that Everton have got, and we've seen that in the last few games now. We've seen it in individual spells. I know people wouldn't watch loads of Everton probably so far this season, but there is quality there, as she mentioned.
Okay.
Another thing to sort of mention is that Kieran spoke after the West Ham game about them being very different stylistically to anything they faced and how direct they were. And we had that whole debate whether match of the day comments sort of saying, well, West Ham weren't that direct. From what I gather, all the clips they then showed was when the game was at 4-1, when West Ham then had a bit more freedom to get the ball down and play. But in the certainly for a large part of that game, it was, you know, hit the channels, bang it up to Antonio, play off the bits and pieces. And I think under a Sean Dyche side, there'll be an element of that with Calvert-Lewin being very good in the air. So that's something that Ipswich, you know, need to be better at and need to have learned some lessons from the West Ham game. Another element of this match, I think, to be mindful of is substitutions. Dyche has been questioned about the choice of subs and the timings that he's made them, certainly after those games against Bournemouth and Villa with the two goal leads were given away. But in this sort of recent three game unbeaten run, I think he's earned a few plaudits for making the right subs at the right time. Ipswich look like they've got the better depth, I would say. Everton are running a pretty thin squad as it is because of, you know, the points deductions and FFP and all of that. And they're carrying a lot of injuries. Alex has mentioned a few there. Right back, I think they've played about four different players at right back because of injuries so far this season. Behind Calvert-Lewin up front, you know, they've got Beto, who's not really done much there, but others injured. Broyer, of course, who they decided to go for late on deadline day is still carrying that foot injury they signed him with. So there's no subplot there. So if Ipswich can kind of be in this game going into the depths of the match, I would hope that with the crowd behind them and now with McKenna's kind of options boosted with the likes of Broadhead back and we've talked about this sort of attacking options he's got, Hurst et al, that maybe subs could make a difference.
Mm. Okay, should we move back to Ipswich then, Stu, in terms of team selection? Clearly the right back is the big talking point, and I think we all probably expect Ben Johnson to be starting there on Saturday. Are there any other kind of talking points, do you reckon, around potential selection? There's a few players clearly who are set in stone until Sam Morsy is suspended at least. But I mean, you mentioned Broadhead, he's an interesting one, isn't he? Just played for Wales. We've not seen him for Town at all for a decent amount of time. And he's one that seems to split people for me. That's certainly looking on social media, which I know is not the best thing to do in terms of a rational debate. But there's some people who think he's going to be amazing and other people who think Town should cut their losses and get rid of him. He's not going to be good enough for the Premier League. Mm. Where do you think in terms of other selection chats we could have?
I think Broadhead, it will be kind of impact sub at best for the foreseeable because he's not played for a long time. As Alex says, Coventry was the last time he played a competitive game for the club, and then a cameo by all accounts, I didn't see it, was quite sharp when he came on and produced some sort of classic Nathan Broadhead touches. He has got that ability to do something out of nothing, to smash one in from the edge of the box or have that X factor moment. My fear with Nathan Broadhead, and this is probably the reason that Everton ultimately decided to let him go, you know, having kept that, there's a reason that you can see these players that leave a big club or a Premier League club at the age of what, 23, 24, something like that. They've kept them for so long because they think, well, they might just happen for them, and then eventually there's a reason they decide to go. And I would say with Nathan, it's probably his consistency from game to game. He'll have a 9 out of 10 match, and then you'll have a couple of matches where you kind of think, I didn't really notice him too much on the pitch, and probably is off the ball stuff. Is he too much of a luxury player in the Premier League where you need to be on it in all aspects of your game? You need to be able to do the off the ball stuff as well. And there are times where, you know, I look back at goals that Ipswich conceded at set pieces and you think, oh, it was Broadhead who lost his man, or, you know, stuff like that. So can't see him coming straight into the team. In terms of who plays, we're having this debate about the right-hand side. I think for the reasons Alex said, I'd be surprised if Hutchinson goes out to the right-hand side. I know he did it on and off in the Championship last season, but I think the way Ipswich are in terms of kind of looking a lot more wing-backy in the Premier League, it needs that sort of Ogbeni Burns presence on the right. So really, I guess the left side of the attack is probably the only one up for debate, whether you go for sort of Jack Clark or Sammy Schmodix, really. Two different types of players and what's better suited to a home game here.
Have you got any thoughts on that, AJ? There's been a bit of a clamour in terms of Sammy Schmodix playing as the 10. Jack Clark has been, I would say, exciting what we've seen of him so far. Clearly, we're coming in a week where Wes Burns has played on the left and Amari Hutchinson has played on the right. Where would what do you reckon would be your suggestions going into this game?
That would be some immense Kieran McKellar jiggery pokery to start Wes Burns on the left and Amari Hutchinson on the right. And then, I don't know, just put like Jack Taylor as the 10 or something like that. That'd be great fun. My gut leans towards maybe not necessarily changing from the West Ham game, which I think will irk a lot of people given how that one played out. But I think that there's enough factors in that that you wouldn't want to be reactionary. And I know that you can be reactionary in terms of kind of looking at least making one or two changes. But to be perfectly honest, I think it's a system that's worked for Ipswich up until the up until the West Ham game. And with that, I think that having had a couple of weeks on the training ground, it will help as well. It might be a factor of looking at it and saying who's featured at international level, who have we had 2 weeks to work with, and say this is what we want you to do, this is how we're going to take on the Everton game, this is how we're going to adapt our style in, let's say, the run-up until the next international break. So that could benefit some of the players who stayed, although in that kind of attacking lineup, most of them are gone. Amari's gone. Wes has gone. Chio's gone. So, yeah, difficult to say. I'd lean towards sticking with what you've got in terms of maybe using Smodics off the bench, off keeping Jack Clark, because I think that his ball carrying and dribbling down the left has been really important. And again, I think that the variation of performance levels between home and away are a big thing. And this is a system that has worked at home. You take the Villa game, it worked really, really well in terms of having Amari, who created good chances through the middle in that game, just being able to kind of drift and float from side to side in terms of having Jack Clark, who was a total nuisance against Villa, in terms of having the direct running of, who started in that one? Was it Wes, I think, started against Villa? So in terms of having that on the right, potentially we can see variation down the line, but I think at home is a formula that we've seen that works. I'd pretty much stick with what we've seen in the last few games.
Okay, then. Prediction time then, boys. Going to start with Stu because it's head versus heart, I guess. It's probably overstating that. I mean, saying that you're an Everton fan is like saying I'm a Derby fan. I couldn't even tell you who plays for Derby now, apart from Caden Jackson and Marcus Harness. The fan in me has long since died. And Ipswich Town are now the team that I follow professionally and personally, I would say. So calling you an Everton fan is probably an overstatement, Stu, although I was astonished by your childhood bedroom when you flashed it up earlier. What's going to happen in this game, mate? Are we predicting the first win of the season?
Cut to the chase, draw 1-1 is what I've gone for. Yeah, that's what I went for when I picked out sort of predictions for the block of games coming up. We've talked about the various sort of things going for and against both teams. Ipswich have been good at home. They've got the home crowd. Everton haven't won away from home, by the way, this calendar year. That's quite the away record. I've just had a look. They're 15 winless on the road, 6 draws, 9 defeats. So their away form coupled with Ipswich's home form, but then recognising that Everton have got, you know, that bit more experience, and I think ultimately we'll end up with the two teams cancelling each other out.
1-1. Who's going to score?
Who's going to score? Hadn't given that a great deal of thought. Let's pluck somebody out of thin air. Right now, I'm going to say, let's go with Liam Delap, safe option.
He is the hot hand, as our American cousins say. AJ, I think you've already won the predictions league for this season. You've got a couple bang on. I think you're streets ahead, certainly streets ahead of me, not for the first time. What do you reckon is going to happen in this game?
I don't know about that, considering that I predicted a win at the London Stadium before the break, and a few of you guys went for Delap as the scorer. So I don't know if I'm streets ahead. I was leaning towards 1-1. But for the interests of entertaining our listeners and viewers and all of our many, many millions of fans, I'm gonna go with a win. Why not? Let's just have a win. I think that the break will do them good. I think that the home form will do them good. I like what I saw against Villa, and if they played that way against most of the other teams in the league, I think they would have won. So if they can put in a performance of that calibre, I think they'll get a win. And I'll say 2-1.
Who's going to score?
This is so hard to try and predict who's actually going to start, but I've stuck with Amari for so long, and he's really annoyed me. But he has scored in midweek, so I'm going to go Amari Hutchinson again.
There you go, Amari. That's a little bit of incentive for you. AJ's really annoyed with you.
So, please score. I picked you for like the last 4 weeks, and I was leaning towards Jack Clark. And if you don't score this time, I will pick Jack Clark. So, Amari, please score.
You've been told. Right, so we've got 2-1, we've got 1-1. I was leaning towards a draw, I must say, but something in me is telling me, especially once you drop that, they've not won away from home for calendar year. The Portman Road factor, the fact that I think Everton, if it's close late on, we know they've got form for crumbling with the crowd at Portman Road as well, the wall of noise they'll be facing. I believe they're pretty vulnerable to set pieces as well. So I'm going to say Town win, and I'm going to say, you've gone 2-1, AJ. I can't see it being 1-0. So I'm going to say, and this is probably very unlikely to happen, but I'm going to say 3-2. In a game in which there's quite a lot of excitement. I can see it being a similar game to the Fulham game, but just with more goals, you know, kind of pulsating end to end, both sides wanting to get something from it, the crowd playing a big part, Town maybe finishing the stronger. And I'm going to go again, given there is that weakness from set pieces, I'm going to go again with Jacob Greaves, who's at some point has got to score from a corner or a free kick. So me and AJ are saying wins, 3-2, 2-1, Stewie, being the level-headed man that he is, saying a draw, 1-1. Ross, I'm sure, will tell us when he gets back from Dubrovnik what he thinks is going to happen.
There we go. Here's another one for you. So if you took these next three games that we've been discussing, how many points do you think would be okay from those three? Because I've got four in my head. If they can get a win, a draw and a defeat from these next three games, in whatever order those come,
yeah,
I think that would be okay. I think that would look, it wouldn't be fantastic, but I think it would keep them in an okay place and ticking along. That's where my kind of expectations are at the moment.
I would agree with that. I think, as you said earlier, if you can average a point a game in the Premier League, that's probably going to be enough to keep you up, isn't it? And I guess looking at the next three, you would go likely draw Everton, lose at Brentford, beat Leicester. But I'm saying they're going to beat Everton. I think they probably will lose at Brentford. I'm hoping they're going to beat Leicester. So being an optimist, I would say 6 points, which would be tremendous. But that is pretty optimistic. What are you saying, AJ?
Difference between kind of what you'd accept and what you'd like, probably, in terms of what I think will work and what we can leave happy with will be 4 points. I think that, as she said, they need to win in this next block of three. I think it's quite hard looking at it as a block of three as well, because I think that Brentford game, they're essentially playing as maybe an upper mid-table side at the moment. I'm really impressed by them. I think they're a hellishly hard place to go, all of those different things. So, yeah, I think really you're honing in on the two home games against sides that they're going to want to finish above. So, realistically, 4-6 would be good from the next three.
The reality just need a win. Reality is Ipswich need to probably win at least 8-9 games this season to stand a chance of staying up. And as we've discussed, there's a good chance that the vast majority of those will have to come at Portman Road. And then there's only a certain, you can start in reality discounting a certain number of teams, the likes of Man City and Liverpool, who they've already played here, etc. You start to whittle it down and there is a certain number of games at Portman Road that Ipswich can target realistically for a win, and these next two fall into that bracket. That's not to underestimate the opposition in any way, shape or form, but the wins have got to come from somewhere at some point, and we can't go too deep into the season without one. So we don't want to go too mad on must-win territory, but equally we don't want this season to sort of fade away. Let's hope it can kind of go deep into the season, and we're not already sort of talking. That'd be quite sad if this long wait for a Premier League season sort of just starts to drift away a little bit too soon. Fingers crossed that's not the case. Look, there's no reason to believe that. They've been really competitive in pretty much every match so far, haven't they? So a rip-roaring afternoon at Portman Road, I think we'll get everybody going again, hopefully.
Yeah, it's obviously not a must win, but it does feel like they need a win in these next three games, doesn't it? In terms of the narrative and the pressure, etc., around the season. Right then, friends, that is Everton done. A few other things I want to mention before we go away this week. One, of course, I'm going to come back to you here, Stu, because you're a big, big, big fan of my live coverage of Fabio Wardley's fight on Saturday night. Working hard, I was at Heath Towers. Only had got halfway through my first beer. And it was all done and dusted. I started the live blog at 8:30, put some very excited analysis of what we might see. Started with a here woe go.
I didn't notice that.
I had, as I said, already had a few sips of beer. And then 3 minutes later, it was over. Big Fab was sensational in Saudi Arabia, ending that rivalry, as I put, conclusively and concussively. Put a big old dent in the side of Fraser Clark's head. Fractured cheekbone. Thankfully, he's okay, but it was pretty terrifying as a visual, with him slumped on the ropes and his jaw out of place. He had no idea where he was, but a huge, huge win for Fabio Wardley. And now he's moved into the top 10 ranking of Ring Magazine's heavyweights. Now, Ring Magazine is like the overarching kind of Bible of boxing. And because of all these nonsense belts, the Ring Magazine ranking is seen as like the kind of unbiased overall ranking, if you like. And Fab has moved into ninth spot on that on their rankings. Frank Warren, who is now his promoter, says he expects him to fight for a world title next year. It's hard for me to because obviously I'd like to bring you in, Stu. I know you're not quite as enthusiastic about boxing as I am, but it's fantastic to see, because it is purely on what we all do as journalists. We love stories. Fab is one of the best stories probably in the whole of sport. He's a guy that only started boxing to lose weight, had no amateur career, turned pro from four white collar fights, which is, you know, the sort of thing that anyone can do, walk into a ring, was expected at every turn to get found out. And now he's on the brink of a world title fight. It's mental.
So how old was he when he started?
I don't think he started until he was in his 20s. He was obviously, he played football when he was a kid. It was in Towns Academy. Clearly, you know, a natural athlete. But yeah, I don't think he started boxing until he was in his 20s. And even then, that was just to try and lose a bit of weight and keep fit. What he's doing is not meant to be possible. You're not meant to be able to do that, especially someone like Fraser Clark, who's been in the, you know, the Great Britain squad for years and medaled at the Olympics. It should not happen. But it's just a brilliant, brilliant story. It's great for the whole feel-good thing around Ipswich Town. Kind of extends to Fab as well, I think.
Unbelievable. My questions for you, as a man more learned on this subject, is I think what everyone's going to want to know. The Portman Road fight, been discussed for a while. Are the stars finally going to align with that? If they can find a, I guess it's it'd be the right time for him to fight, and it's got to fit in with obviously the football schedule as well.
I think if anything, that might be further away now, the Portman Road fight, because fighting a world champion, no world champion is going to give up their advantage, if you like, by coming to Ipswich to defend against Fabio Wardley. And I should say there are only two world champions at the moment. Alexander Usyk, who is insanely good, and Fab has been used as a sparring partner for a couple of times, who defends against Tyson Fury in December. I'd expect Usyk to win that again, if I'm honest. And then Daniel Dubois, who took the belt that Usyk chucked in a bin, basically, by knocking out Anthony Joshua. So there's only two world champions, and Joshua and Dubois are going to rematch. Usyk is obviously fighting Fury. So realistically, we're looking at Fab having another fight, probably his first fight at world level, if you like, maybe as a world title eliminator, that kind of thing. I suppose it could happen at Portman Road, but I'd be surprised if anyone was willing to give up that significant of an advantage in that sort of fight. So if anything, I would say Portman Road is maybe further away until maybe Fab has a belt around his waist.
This might be a silly question. Could he run into AJ at some point as he's on the way up and potentially Joshua's on the way down?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that as it stands, AJ and Dubois are going to rematch. I can't see that being any different. So potentially, in this classic combat sports, eats its kind of champions, the kind of old champions are fed to the young up-and-comers, as you like. It could happen. It might happen. I'd imagine if AJ does lose again, he'd be thinking about retirement rather than fighting young, hungry up and comers like Fabio. Again, Fabio's sparred with AJ, so he knows him. It's not completely out of the question it would happen. It's just fascinating as a story. It's tremendous. He's got terrifying power, God-given natural power, the sort of stuff that he does. So there we go. Any thoughts, AJ?
I like the tweet you got in a response to Stu's live blog bit where he posted up the minutes and good old Benno replied saying he's used to it all being over in 3 minutes.
Hey,
slick. Lovely, I like stuff. It. Overall, yeah, I'm just happy. I think he comes across as a really nice guy, and it's a fantastic story to get to that level because you look at the rankings and these are huge, huge names, and to have someone that will go out and fight one of these guys with an Ipswich Town logo around his waist, with the flag over his shoulders, all those different things, I think is fantastic. And if we can get that Portman Road fight at some point against a big name, that would be fantastic as well. But just the fact that he's there pushing the brand, essentially, I think is really, really nice. And he's embracing it. And just from his perspective, it's a nice story. And hopefully he can continue this upward trajectory, because if he's fighting one of these big guys in the next year or two for a world belt, then that can only be, well, obviously it will only be good for him, but also in terms of the football club and pushing that connection and the whole town, to be honest.
Do you remember, Mark, in the early stages of Fab's rise, there was talk at one stage that maybe you and Ross might go down to the gym and document maybe you getting some pads on and letting Fabio punch you in the torso as hard as he could just to see what that might.
This is an FPL forfeit for the end of the season. Whoever finishes the lowest of us four has to take one of those shots.
Given that's likely to be me. I mean, that is the other thing that really impressed me about his performance was that he, in the first fight, he kind of went headhunting when he had Clark hurt. But in this fight, when he had him hurt, he went straight to the body, which is like textbook. Kill the body and the hands will drop and the head will ultimately die, for want of a better term. So he showed great composure in that as well. I was talking to one of his team actually earlier this week. There's a big pro boxing show in Ipswich this weekend. First professional boxing show in Ipswich in Suffolk for 6 years, where Fabio will be. And there'll also be, I'm told, some town players, Harry Clark and Aaron Murich, are going to be there at Trinity Park on Saturday. And he said he was watching him because obviously they planned this going to the body if and when they get Clark hurt. And he said he was knocking his coach, Rob Hodgins, who has the big baddy pad on, so he was literally knocking him off his feet, throwing body shots. And so this is a guy, Rob's a decent sized guy and he's wearing pads, and Fab is literally sending him flying from punching him to it. It's just as I say, terrifying power, fantastic, exhilarating power to see it in person. So that's that. Fantastic news for Fabio, big win. The other thing I want to mention, of course, is FPL boys. Have we thought about any changes we're going to make this weekend? I think I'm going to stick with it, you know. I had thought about bringing Cole Palmer in, who's clearly very, very in form. And I was debating about getting rid of Mo Salah, but I think I'm going to give Mo one more chance to see what he can do this weekend, because I think the fixtures are kind. I can't remember they're playing off the top of my head. Have you got any changes planned, AJ?
Someone's not listening to the FPL pod then. In terms of Liverpool's fixtures, they're basically hell on earth, I think, in terms of who they've got, because it is also like they're a bit kind of hit and miss in terms of who they've got in the Premier League, but they've also got games like Real Madrid in the Champions League, and that's sandwiched in between the City games. The next two are Chelsea and Arsenal and
Villa.
There are some easier ones in there, but then sandwiched in between the Champions League games, that worries me a little bit. So I'm probably leaning towards doing the Cole Palmer swap. I banked up my three transfers, waited patiently. So might toy around with some bits, but the one that is standing out to me is going Salah to Palmer.
Okay. I think my thought process there was, who's more likely to win that Liverpool-Chelsea game? Liverpool. Therefore, Salah more likely to do something than Palmer. Stewie, you got any thoughts? You kind of do it on the morning, man, as it were.
Yeah, haven't given it a single thought thus far. I think I'll just go with, I'm just going to roll with what I've got. I only just played my wild card, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. In terms of sticking with it, that's something obviously that England haven't done. Leif Davis and Calvin Phillips have got a new England manager potentially, boys. And shock, horror, outrage, particularly from the Daily Mail, he's German. this isn't the Brexit we voted for. What do Germans know about football? What have they ever won? Outrageous, AJ. This is a national disgrace.
It is shocking behaviour. Yeah. This, I can't believe they've gone and done this. What do they call it, like a national travesty or something? I mean, I'm not that kind of fussed, to be honest, about England. From my perspective, I kind of get some people saying, oh, you know what? It should be the best of ours against the best of ours. That's not the rules. And the rules are that you want to win football games and you want to get the best manager possible. And in terms of the free managers available, those who are not currently at clubs, I would rank Thomas Tuchel maybe the top apart from Zidane. So here's my question to anyone who's concerned about his nationality. Would anyone be upset if Pep Guardiola came in to manage England? Would you maybe talk about his nationality? I don't think so.
I think even if Klopp had got it, you wouldn't have had the same reaction as a German as well. So sometimes it's just something in the name, isn't it? And Tuchel isn't quite sort of revered in the same way as those two that had just been mentioned. But it's not something that I'm going to be losing any sleep over. If he can go and win us a major tournament, then all for it.
Exactly. Pipe down, you daft racists. The other thing I want to talk about, friends, is of course the wheels versus doors debate. I've had some communication this week after we definitively decided that there were more doors in the world. I ruled on that as someone who believes that to be true. Had an email from Stuart Young. Thanks, Stuart. First line, "Oi, Heath, you blithering idiot." Outrageous, Stuart. Get this at home all the time. I don't need it from external forces as well. He goes on to say that my argument was very short-sighted. Not something I haven't heard before. There are a number of doors within many buildings that contain wheels within the door mechanisms, e.g. up and over garage doors will have a minimum of two wheels. A sliding patio door will have a minimum of four wheels. A bifold door will have a minimum of two wheels. Blah, 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 blah. Secondly, you seem to be fixated on the only type of vehicle being a car. I didn't actually say that. Ever heard of an 18-wheeler? He says with lots of exclamation marks and question marks. What about trucks, vans and pickups with more than two wheels on the rear axle? There's all sorts of other forms of transport that have wheels but no doors, like bicycles, motorcycles, scooters, forklifts. I'd also say that trains have more wheels than doors. Just admit you're wrong, he ends it. And then he just adds, anyway, I love the pod. Enjoy the content you put out. Thanks, Stuart, for putting me in my place.
I should have at least changed my first name as well, really, shouldn't I, when sent in that email?
Get
lazy just to change.
I also want to
surname.
Give a shout out to another one, which came from Carl Williams, who says that he has a proposal regarding the cog/wheel debate. I'm no mechanic at all, but how about a flywheel being considered a wheel? Would you consider that a wheel? That's Carl's thoughts, again, kind of echoing what Stu says. You're all wrong still, friends. It's definitely more doors in the world.
I knew the listeners would back me up. They've seen sense.
And just finally, before we go, I want to give a shout out to another listener who is from our American contingent. Our second biggest audience is in America, of course. Chris Briggs, who is flying over from the Windy City, Chicago, this weekend. And he's very excited because he's managed to get tickets to the Everton game. Him and his family are coming. I think they're staying in London, but travelling to Ipswich for the day on Saturday, and we'll be at the Everton game. So I hope it's a great game for you, Chris. I hope you enjoy your first experience of football at Portman Road. I hope you do get yourself in the fan zone, get to the Greyhound as well, pre-game, and have yourself a little pint and a burger, mix in with the fans. So enjoy it, please, and let us know how you get on. Hopefully, we're going to get you on game day with Rossi if we can line that up. That would be brilliant. Anything else to mention, friends, before we take our leave? So our note, as I talk about 69 days before Christmas, that pile of boxes behind you, mate, of your book, it's almost gone. They're no longer even visible.
They're just in another location at the moment. Don't worry, there are still some available. They're going out in dribs and drabs, but
what's
he's still there. If you want them, for Christmas presents.
Yeah.
Spoke to a few people. What's the email? The email address, yeah, I should probably give that out. JasonDazelBook@gmail.com.
There we go. And of course, again, I don't even know if this video is going to go out because Ross isn't around, but just showing it visually. Mission Impossible, still on the shelves. You can also get it on the Newscast website. Multiple links for there. And clearly, obviously, KOA merch as well for Christmas. What a time to be alive. You can give Stuart's book, little bundle, this, maybe a KOA hoodie you could give for Christmas as well. AJ, anything from you? Anything you want to mention?
What you're going to see in the next few weeks is I'm going to have stocks and boxes of Stu's book behind me.
Now you'd just be buying them.
Yeah. Where do you think all those books have gone? I've just been like creating aliases and emailing the email to go through and get them all. So yeah,
you can join me live from the pulping factory, a la Alan Partridge, in the new year. I think I'm going to throw this out there. If somebody actually goes through putting together the ultimate KOA bundle as just described and takes a little picture, I think that surely that gets friend of the show status.
I mean, there is no longer...
We could get Andy Warren to sign off on it if he still holds the keys.
I think if you put together that bundle, Stu, you deserve friend of the show status. Yeah. That's a status we've not given anyone for some time. So if you put together the Kings of Anglia Christmas bundle, which would be Stu's book, Mission Impossible book, some sort of KOA merchandise, and obviously something from Manscaped, use the code KOA and manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery, I think you would immediately go into the pantheon with friends of the show, legends for Kings of Anglia. And that's a great shout, Stu, ahead of Christmas, 69 days, if I mentioned it. The other thing I mentioned is the Richard Naylor pod, which has been very well received. A lot of people have been really enjoying that Rossi did before he jetted off. Go back and consume that. And also, we've got a really good offer going at the moment. £5 for 5 months, obviously ahead of going to this big game against Everton. That will clearly also take you through the Christmas crunch period, the much changed Christmas crunch period, and then through January transfer window. God, that's going to be a big one as well, isn't it? And well deep into the season. So £5 for 5 months, or you can get 40% off a whole year, which I think works out as £31 for a year, which would be tremendous in terms of offer, in terms of value for you. And clearly your support means a lot to us, because it just means we can carry on doing what we do, essentially. We love doing it. So yeah, if you do want supporters, that'd be great. I know thousands of you already have, but if you haven't yet, please consider it. Anything else from you, AJ or Stu?
No other business.
Excellent. Big game at Portman Road this weekend. Then the boys will all be there. Say hello if you do see them. Let's hope, Stu, that Town chew up the toffees and spit them out this weekend. Have a great weekend, friends. We'll be back next week to talk about it.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.